is the universe speaking to you. You are now tuned into the Modern Spiritual Life Coaching Podcast by the certified master life coach and spiritual guide, Coach Chip. Welcome, souls. We now begin this episode of a transformational journey. Unedited, unscripted, and creating something from nothingness. Now, let there be light on modern spiritual life coaching.
Welcome to the Modern Spiritual Podcast. You are tuned into the Morning Gratitude. This is episode 176. It's about climate change, which is a natural phenomenon. Climate keeps changing all the time. The fact that climate changes is not in itself a threat, because obviously in the past human beings have adapted to changes in climate. Now we are about to hear from Fred Singer with the truth about climate change on the Modern Spiritual Podcast with Integrity.
It's a great pleasure for me today to introduce Dr. Fred Singer, who's a longtime Technion friend and has an amazing career that there's no chance that I can even start describing here, or I won't leave Fred any time to talk about his topic. Let me just choose two lines out of his resume. In the 1940s, Fred was involved in U.S. Navy in active duty with the U.S. Navy and in anti-mine warfare, and later designed an early programmable computer under the direction of John von Neumann. I think that speaks for itself. In the 1950s, he got a White House commendation from President Eisenhower. For those of you who studied their U.S. history, for early design of space satellites, for drafting in 1954 the resolutions of satellites for IUGG and URSI and the International Geophysical Year. He's one of the founding fathers of climate monitoring from space, and he got the U.S. Department of Commerce Gold Medal Award for the development of management of weather satellites. With great pleasure, Fred, the stage is yours.
For those of you who don't remember President Eisenhower, he served sometime between President Lincoln and Clinton. Well, it's certainly a pleasure to be here. And the subject I'm going to talk about, which is climate and climate change and its causes, really has become of minor importance in the last few weeks because of what's happened in Copenhagen in December and because of the revelations of so-called climate gate, which throw into doubt all of the data, surface data, that have been used to back up human-caused climate change. The real reason why this subject is important here in Israel is because many people, including most politicians, still believe that they have to adjust energy policy in Israel to meet some arbitrary demand on carbon dioxide emissions. It makes absolutely no sense for Israel to do anything at all about carbon dioxide emissions, even if they were important. Israel has much more pressing problems related to energy security, to be worried about the global climate. And as I'll try to point out, the global climate pretty much is controlled by nature, and there's nothing you can do about it anyway. But how to explain this to politicians? That's your job. My job here today is to talk a little bit about the causes of climate change and address what I think is the central problem, one problem only. Is climate change of the last century, the 20th century, is it naturally caused? or is it man-made? Now, it turns out that both possibilities are plausible. It's certainly, we know the climate has been changing throughout the history of the Earth, warming and cooling and warming and cooling. We have, we have evidence for ice ages and for hot periods and ice ages and hot periods. It's been going back and forth. And there's no reason to think that these natural variations would suddenly stop in the 20th century. They must continue, obviously. On the other hand, we also know that carbon dioxide, a greenhouse gas, has been increasing in the Earth's atmosphere in the last 100 years, primarily because of human activities, that is, because of the burning of fossil fuels. And it's plausible, at least, to think that it should have some influence on climate. And the question is, how important is it? That's the only question that one needs to address. Don't worry about glaciers, don't worry about heat waves, don't worry about malaria and all these other things that people bring in. You know, severe storms, hurricanes, that's unimportant. The only thing important is to decide which way does the evidence point. Does it point to an appreciable human influence or to a negligible human influence? That's all that counts. So I'll try to give you a discussion, which will have to be very brief, of course. Let's see, well, time, yeah, here it is. It has to be very brief, but we'll allow for some questions. I hope there'll be some discussion. And I know I'm going to be meeting with some of you afterwards for a more intensive discussion, because, quite frankly, there are a lot of scientific problems that haven't been settled yet. I can actually give you a list of problems to which I don't know the answer. And they're important problems. They should be settled. They don't affect my major thesis here, but it would be nice to know, for example, why the climate models don't agree with observations. And it would be nice to know exactly what are the natural causes of climate change in detail. So with this introduction, let me perhaps go through a slideshow here. Okay. We have, as you know, the United Nations has set up a panel called the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which has representatives of some 120, 100, 200 governments, I don't know how many, and they have climate scientists from all of these governments working on this report. They cover everything from Albania to Zimbabwe, A to Z. On the other hand, we now have the NIPCC, which some people say means not IPCC or never IPCC, but actually stands for Non-Governmental International Panel on Climate Change. I'm happy to say there are about 16 nations represented. We don't have Albania, we don't have Zimbabwe, but we have the most important nations that have actually working climate scientists, including Israel. Nir Shaviv is one of our members, son of Giora. Many of them prefer not to have their names listed because they would like to be able to survive in the academic world, which is very difficult these days. But some are, like me, who are retired, don't mind to have their names listed, so we have about 20-odd names, and we have about 40 who have worked on this. All right, I will go through this fairly rapidly. Our conclusion is given in the title of our report. I'll quickly show you what it looks like. This is actually the summary of the report, "Nature, not human activity, rules the climate." It's not quite accurate. Well, it is accurate, actually. It doesn't say that the human activity doesn't do anything, but human activity is a very minor contribution to climate change. And that is the important point from a policy point of view. It means, essentially, there's nothing you can really do about it, and certainly all of the measures, all of the policies that have been instituted, like the Kyoto Protocol, are useless, completely pointless, in fact, even counterproductive, and very, very expensive. The full report just came out. It's 880 pages. It's about so thick, I didn't bring it with me because I didn't want to pay excess baggage. But we tried to produce a report which is at least as thick as the IPCC report and just as heavy. Hopefully it will impress some people. I don't know. I prefer the summary because it is really more readable, which is only 40 pages. Even that's a lot. Okay, the mandate of the IPCC is very clear. It tells you that they have it. It's published. They say it's comprehensive, objective, open, transparent. It's completely untrue. It's not open. It's not transparent. We just found out that they won't tell us what the raw data look like or how they've treated them. In fact, that's what ClimateGate is all about. And their charter actually says that they must look at evidence that's relevant to the understanding of the risk of human-induced climate change. So they are biased to look at data or evidence from that point of view. Now, I must say there are a lot of very good people who have worked on the IPCC reports, and they're very comprehensive and very valuable, someone like me. They're very thick. They have no index, so very difficult to read for any ordinary person. The summary of the IPCC reports are put together by governmental scientists, and they are selective. They take from the major report those things that support the idea. Oops. Of human-induced climate change. So it's not surprising that the IPCC comes out with the conclusion that global warming is human-caused, and they even claim to be 90 to 90% sure. That's an amazing statement, because there's nothing backing it up. There's no evidence for this. None. No evidence whatsoever. On the other hand, says that nature is the major cause of climate change in the 20th century. We also say that carbon dioxide is not a pollutant, and that mitigation is pointless, costly, and ineffective. So it's very clear, IPCC versus NIPCC. That's the basic issue. I'll just point out the scheme of the presentation. We need to decide between this and this on the basis of evidence. And if the evidence favors natural causes, as I think it does, then the two interesting scientific issues, which I really don't have time to discuss. One has to explain the disparity between observations and models. Why do the models show a major warming and the observations don't? And the answer probably is a negative feedback in the real atmosphere that is not captured by models. And the other interesting, very interesting scientific issue is, well, what is causing the climate change? How does nature change climate? Is it solar induced or is it internal? Is it ocean atmosphere oscillations? And that's a difficult problem to address. Many of us favor solar, and I'll try to show you some evidence for that. On the other hand, if you conclude, as IPCC does, that the cause is anthropogenic, or human caused, then before they can do anything, they have to decide, is global warming good or bad? That is very seldom discussed. And it turns out global warming is good.
Better than global cooling, as was in the past.
It's good all around, on the average. It actually promotes agriculture, the well-being of people. And particularly if you go back into history, you will find that well, we have good data and good records, let's say in Europe, you find that during the warm periods in Europe, life was wonderful. People were happy. They lived longer lives. They were not hungry. They didn't starve. But during the cold periods, like the Little Ice Age, they starved and the population fell. They had a very difficult time. So that's the one thing that needs to be settled, which I will not have time to discuss in any detail. And then the question is CO2 mitigation effective? So if you want to go to mitigation, you not only have to show that anthropogenic warming is important, but you also have to show that global warming is bad, and you have to show that CO2 mitigation is effective. None of these things work. So the cause for policies on climate change is very weak, non-existent. All right. I could quickly discuss with you the evidence that the IPCC has to show you, and I think you will may agree, that the evidence is not very good or even not existent. Scientists normally don't use the first item, scientific consensus. That's basically how lawyers look at the issue. They say, well, what does the preponderance of scientists say? That's not a way to settle scientific issues. You don't vote on science. You try to do serious work and look at physical evidence. The IPCC has argued in their third report, which was about 9 years ago, that the 20th century was unusually warm. It was the warmest in the last 1,000 years. As I'll try to show you, this statement is not correct. In fact, it turns out to be, at this point, somewhat fraudulent, because it was based on an analysis that was shown to be spurious, just wrong, from a statistical point of view. And so that IPCC no longer uses this argument, but many people still do. And those that do obviously should know that the evidence no longer exists, or if it ever did. Glaciers melting is a favorite piece of evidence. But as you probably will figure out, it doesn't tell you anything at all about the cause. It just tells you it's getting warmer. That may be due to natural causes or man-made causes, but it cannot distinguish between the two. So all this glacier melting is completely inconclusive and actually not relevant. No unusual weather, that's the same problem here. Correlation between temperature and CO2, as I'll try to show you, is spurious and sometimes positive, sometimes negative. People tend to ignore the times when it is negative, but in fact, during the last century, the 20th century, from 1940 to 1975, temperatures were falling and CO2 was rising. In the last 10 years, CO2 has been rising, but temperatures have not increased in the last 10 years. It's now 11 years. So correlation doesn't work either. Sea level rise is not unusual. I won't have time to discuss it in any detail, but sea level has been rising since the last ice age. It has risen, global sea level has risen by 120 meters in the last 18,000 years. So at one time you could walk from England to France. Didn't need a tunnel. And sea level is still rising and has been rising for the last, 18,000 years. It rises now at the rate, or for the last few hundred years, it's been rising at the rate of about 18 centimeters per century. And I think it'll continue to rise at the same rate no matter what we do. until the next ice age. And then, of course, ocean water will turn to ice and sea level will again drop. The main thing is that the models cannot reproduce the 20th century temperatures. Models are not evidence. Models are just models. They're only as good as the assumptions that you feed into them. And the assumptions that have been fed into the models by scientists who work on these things, by modelers, are pretty crude. They don't represent what is happening in the real atmosphere. Just to give one example, the models cannot reproduce accurately clouds. Clouds are very important. They reflect sunlight back out into space, so they control the heat input to the Earth from the sun. And if you cannot simulate cloudiness well enough, then you really don't have a model that represents what's going on in the atmosphere. Well, this is supposed to be funny. The real consensus, you see this IPCC guy standing up here. I don't know if you can read this. Hands up, who thinks greenhouse gases have no effect and therefore we all need new jobs? Anyone? No hands go up. Unfortunately, that has affected some of the thinking, particularly of the younger generation, who, you know, have to take care of families and have to keep jobs and have to look for research money, because if they want to get promotion, they have to show published research. So it has a serious influence on the science of climate change. And you can see it in the composition of the people who call themselves realists, or are sometimes called skeptics or deniers. They tend to be somewhat older. Many of them are retired and or have independent incomes or don't care about job security. This shows temperatures in the last 1,000 years. I show this because this first graph comes from an early report of the IPCC, published in the 90s. And you see the medieval warm period, the Little Ice Age, which was discussed in some detail in European records, and then the recovery from the Little Ice Age taking place from about 1850 onward. And we're now roughly here. And we're not nearly as warm as we were 1,000 years ago. This is what the IPCC published in their third report.
That's the hockey stick.
This is a so-called hockey stick, because it looks, if you look, turn your head around, you'll see there's a long shaft, and there's a blade. And then suddenly you see temperatures rising here. And this turns out to be essentially a fake. We now know that this is so because we have now read the emails from the Climate Research Unit at the University of East Anglia, where they say in one of the emails, we have to hide the decline in temperature and use a trick. Well, the trick was, you see, all these temperatures here obviously are not measured with thermometers because there weren't any. So they come mostly from tree rings and other proxies. And the temperatures there did not increase. So what they did is to stop the proxy record and then added on in red the instrumentation record from thermometers, which has problems of its own, and to give the impression that the 20th century is unusually warm. It isn't. Anyway, I can show you better data. This is, by the way, we'll come back to that. I better do it now. This is the temperature record from thermometers, which goes back to about 1880. There are some thermometers that go back further, but to really have a good distribution around the Earth, you go back to about 1880, 1900, and what this shows is a general rise in temperature, particularly
this is between surface temperature, the soil.
What?
This is the soil temperature or air temperature?
Air temperature.
This is air temperature weather stations.
Because it is written surface temperature.
Yeah. Yeah, this comes
surface temperature,
which means the temperature at about this level above the surface. And you see here, particularly this rise between 1920 and 1940, which I think is real. That's a real increase.
What's being plotted?
Temperature. Against some kind of base. Doesn't matter what the base is. We're only interested in changes. So this is the change in temperature over time between 1880 and the present. You see this rise here, that's real. The decline for about 35 years. And this rise here, which I suspect is not real.
Did the measurements are also made by radio sons in a very great height in the atmosphere or only near the ground?
This is all from weather stations. And the weather station record turns out to be problematic because nobody's ever been able to check the raw data, nor the way in which they had been treated in the analysis. That was what ClimateGate is really all about. They wouldn't reveal the raw data, and they wouldn't tell us about the analysis. You see, you have thousands of weather stations taking readings. The question is, how do you combine these readings from throughout the world? What algorithms do you use? How do you treat them? How do you correct them? And so on. We don't know the answer to that yet. We won't know probably for several months. These are data that measure temperature at the middle troposphere or lower troposphere. But since you're interested in changes, it doesn't matter as long as you assure that the level doesn't change, the height. So this shows the satellite record, and you see, you don't see this rapid rise in temperature that you see in the surface record, which has always told me, at least, that there's something wrong with the surface record. And what is wrong is probably the fact that the surface record is affected by urban heating, because the best weather stations are located in urban areas. In fact, the best weather stations are located at airports. So, okay, I will agree that airports are warming. But that's not the same thing as global warming. It has nothing to do with carbon dioxide. It has to do with air traffic. It has to do with the way cities are built around airports and so on. Yeah. The correlation is quite good, except the trends do not correlate. In other words, the satellites show the same up and down changes, but they don't show the trend. In fact, let me show you. There's essentially no trend, or very small trend, of warming up to about 1997. Then you get a sudden spike, which is due to a very strong, unusually strong El Nino. And then you get no real increase, in fact, you get a decrease in the 21st century. Let me go on and give you some idea of what the...
hide also this information about the 10 years that the temperature are reducing.
No. Yeah, the satellites don't actually measure temperature. Let me go dark. They measure the emission of microwaves from oxygen molecules, but oxygen is very well distributed in the atmosphere, so there's no problem about that. There are other problems. For example, the satellites don't measure temperature every hour. You have to wait until the satellite goes over a certain area. Also, the satellites don't tell you what the temperature was before 1979, because there were no good satellite in existence then. No problem. Satellites cannot measure temperatures at different levels of the atmosphere. Only balloons can do that with radio sounds. Nothing's perfect in this world. But they do measure geographic distribution very well, and they measure trends. Well, let me show you something about the ice core data from the Antarctic. This is the favorite slide of Al Gore, in which he tries to demonstrate to a lay audience that there's perfect correlation between temperature in blue and carbon dioxide. In fact, there is a good correlation. However, correlation doesn't mean causation. So you have to look into the matter in detail. And when you do that, you find that the temperature rises first. You see it here. And then carbon dioxide. And there's a delay of several hundred years. So normally, in a correlation, the cause precedes the effect. I mean, you hope so, at least. Logically, the cause should precede the effect. So clearly, the cause is temperature increase, and the effect is a CO2 increase. This is the information from the 21st century, so from the last 10 years. Here you see temperature data from satellites and from the ground, and you see the carbon dioxide rising. This is from satellites. And again, I will tell you that the models all show that the warming should be most pronounced in the polar regions. The models actually will give you the geographic distribution of warming. Well, satellites can measure geographic distribution. And while it is true that in the North Polar region, you do see the warming, more or less as predicted by the models, in the South Polar region, in the Antarctic, you only see cooling. So in the South Polar region, there's disagreement between the models and the observations. So that falls down to the best example I have is this one here. I'll have to explain this. It's really very funny. Al Gore, when he was vice president, wanted to impress upon the public what a serious problem global warming is. So he set up a task force in the government. In fact, he got the whole government involved in this, to study the effects of global warming on the United States in the year 2100. And divided the United States into 18 regions. It's a big country, you know. 18 regions. And for each region, he had a calamity. For example, in Florida, you would have hurricanes. In other places in the Gulf, you'd have sea level rise. In the Midwest, you'd have droughts. So every region had a calamity. And he was trying to show that global warming will produce calamities. It was a serious problem. So how do you discuss what will happen in the year 2100? How do you do that? You have to have a model, right? You must. To predict, you have to use a model. Now, then he made a big strategic error. Can you guess what the error is? He used two models instead of one. That was his big error. And the two models disagree completely. Here you see a good example. These are the 18 regions. We don't need to go into detail. Here's California. Here's New England. One model, and this is predicted rainfall. One model shows, for example, here, North Dakota becoming a swamp. And the other model says, no, it'll become a desert, giving opposite results. Even where they move in the same direction, they disagree as to the magnitude. One model, hardly any change, and the other model, huge changes. So this whole exercise, as I call it, was finally thrown out because we sued the government. Not I, but others sued the government under the what's called the Data Quality Act. We have a law in the United States called the Data Quality Act, and we attacked this report on the basis of the Data Quality Act, and the government withdrew the report. The most important way of deciding on the cause of warming is to apply what is called a fingerprint test. I'll have to explain what this means. Every climate model shows a certain fingerprint of warming, that is, a pattern of warming. A pattern of in latitude and altitude. And let me show you what it looks like. This is my first publication on this. It shows that in the equatorial zone, or in the tropical zone, here, near the equator, the satellite data and the ground data disagree completely. The satellite data show a slight cooling, and the surface data show a slight warming. Models predict the opposite. Models say it should warm in the troposphere more than at the surface. This is what every model says. I'll have to explain what this is. Here's the equator. Here's the North Pole. Here's the South Pole. This is altitude in kilometers. And what is plotted here by color is the temperature trend due to greenhouse gas increases, say due to CO2 increases. And you see that you get general warming trend in the troposphere and a general cooling trend in the stratosphere. But more important, the trend, the warming trend, is a maximum here in the tropical zone at around 10 kilometers. Every model predicts this. This is the fingerprint, if you like, of greenhouse warming according to models. So what do the observations show? No hot spot. In fact, they show a cool spot here. I consider this the most powerful argument that we have against any appreciable human influence on climate change. We cannot say how big the human influence is, whether it's 5% or 10%, but it's small. It could be less than that. There's no way of telling because we don't see any evidence for it. A different way of doing this work is to, and perhaps this is easier to see, is to plot temperature trend here. Temperature trend versus altitude. Pressure or altitude, if you like. The models all show an increase in a maximum temperature trend at around 10 kilometers. The observations all show a decrease. Now, what do our opponents say to this? A reasonable question. They say, well, maybe there's something wrong with the data. They don't say there's something wrong with the models. They say maybe there's something wrong with the data. That's very unlikely, but it is now a subject of intense discussion. Controversy is the right word. They have published a paper attacking our paper in which they use data that show a warming. And I don't think the data are, it don't actually exist, the data, because they're reconstructed data based on models. And also they use error bars that are much larger. They try very much to show that there is no disagreement between the models and the observations.
When you write what their models, is these models that the IPCC relying on?
Yes. They're roughly 22 models, 20 major models. And that's actually one good argument against human climate change. The argument has to do with the letter S. Why 22 models? I mean, if models can predict what is happening, there should only be one, not 22. And they should, or at least the 22 should all agree with each other. They don't. They don't. They disagree with each other very strongly in terms of what we call climate sensitivity by something like 300% or even more.
The derivatives of the model disagree.
Yeah.
Not the absolute result, but the derivative.
Yeah. Let me go on here and just go to the conclusions of the NIPCC. The observations I propose show no detectable human fingerprint. The models overestimate the greenhouse gas effects. The models all predict a strong warming trend. Observations don't show that. And the answer must be there must be some kind of negative feedback. I'll be glad to discuss this point further. CO2 is not a pollutant. Mitigation is pointless. Sea level rise will continue at its normal rate, about 18 centimeters per century. And we also conclude that natural climate change is mostly the result of variable solar activity. Let me now, in conclusion, talk briefly about these two points, sea level rise, because that's sort of interesting. Maybe not for Israel, but you have the ocean, you have Mediterranean here. But in some places, that's a very emotional subject. In Holland, for example, sea level rise is of real importance. In Colorado, they don't care. Okay, what I'd like to show you on sea level rise, I will not have time to go into any detail, is simply show you what the IPCC says about sea level rise. Okay? Well, Feynman is considered to be a great physicist, so I need to show this here. I like his statement. Okay, sea level rise. The first IPCC report in 1990 gave wide limits on sea level rise, but a maximum rise by the year 2100 of about 367 centimeters. That's a lot. That's nearly 4 centimeters per year. In the second report, they've scaled it down. These are the numbers taken from their report. The third report scales it down some more. The fourth report, the last report, this was in their draft, and the final report showed this. The IPCC has now been attacked by some of the extremists as being too conservative, if you can believe that. So they're being attacked on the right as being too conservative. And to show you where Al Gore stands, he, of course, listens to James Hansen. Hansen's number for the year 2100 is 600 centimeters, which is roughly 20 times the mean of the IPCC. This is somebody called Ramstorff in Germany, who has a cockamamie theory about sea level rise, which makes absolutely no sense, either theoretically or empirically. Hansen at least has a rationale. Hansen assumes, to get his number, that the ice from Greenland, the Greenland will tilt, the ice will slide off into the ocean, and it'll melt. that's the only way he can get sea level rise. How else? The Greenland ice has to disappear. The ice cap of Greenland has to disappear within the next 90 years. Never mind that it didn't disappear during the medieval climate maximum. It stayed around. It's been around for millions of years. But according to his view, this is a very, very special century. Something will happen during this century to make the ice slide off Greenland into the ocean. Ramstorff has a theory which I won't even discuss. I've quoted Wolfgang Pauli in this report. Wolfgang Pauli once said about a theory which he didn't like. He said it isn't even wrong. It's worthless. So I can use that expression here. This is the 18 centimeters per century, which I think will be continued. Now, as to the actual causes of climate change, I promised to show you something about solar variability, and here it is. This is a record from stalagmites in a cave in Oman on the Arabian Peninsula. And since this was published in 2001 in Nature, there have been many other examples. So this is not the only example. What this shows is carbon-14 plotted here and oxygen-18 plotted here. Carbon-14 is, as you know, produced by cosmic rays in the Earth's upper atmosphere. And since cosmic rays are modulated by solar activity, there's a pronounced 11-year cycle, and there are many other cycles in cosmic rays that correspond to solar activity. This is therefore a proxy for solar activity. Oxygen 18 is a standard proxy for temperature. That's how the ice core temperatures are dated, obtained back going back to 800,000 years. They measure oxygen 18. So this shows essentially the solar activity climate relationship over a 3,000 year period. Now the central portion is blown up here. So you can see in some detail how good the correlation is. So in spite of everything I've said about correlation, in this case, I've changed my mind. I believe that this correlation is sound. In fact, it's almost a year-by-year correlation. See, every peak is reflected. Even this little thing is reflected. So there's a strong association then between solar activity and temperature. And we know, of course, that the Earth's temperature cannot affect the sun. So the question is, of what is causing what, is pretty clear. It must be the sun affecting what's happening on the Earth. I think this is the strongest, in my view, the strongest argument in favor of the solar activity hypothesis, which has been advanced by, for example, Nir Shaviv in Hebrew University, by Svensmark in Denmark, and by others. The exact mechanism by which solar activity or cosmic rays affect the climate is still in dispute. The exact mechanism is still disputed, but it seems likely that the mechanism is one in which cosmic ray activity, varying cosmic ray activity, causes varying cloudiness. So it's cloudiness that ultimately controls climate and temperatures. So this is the essentially the end of my presentation. To summarize again, we strongly believe that the evidence, so-called evidence of the IPCC, is worthless, doesn't exist, and that the cause of 20th century climate change is primarily natural, that the human influence is very small and not really significant.
You know,
I suggest we thank her.